Let's go!
Come on, everybody, and let's get to bumping, cause it's trailblazer time. Baby, Rip City's jumping now.
Keep Randall up the middle.
Hit!
Come on, everybody.
All right, everybody, welcome to the 380th edition of the Holy Backboard Podcast. I am Dustin here in Rip City, and I got my man
Sage ready to talk about these Portland Trail Blazers. It's been a few days since March Madness, and I'm fiending for some more, but we got to talk about these Trail Blazers beforehand.
Yeah, the Blazers currently on a 7-game losing streak. They lost, to recap, over the past week in Chicago, 107-110, a game in which saw the Blazers take the lead late, but it wasn't enough to hold off the Bulls. They come home for a quick 3-game homestand, losing back-to-back against the Los Angeles Clippers, 116-103, and then 125-117. That game saw Anthony Simons exit in the second quarter, and he has now been since ruled out against Houston and now Atlanta. They gave the defending champions a run for their money, albeit without Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray, but it was the first time since 2012 that a team had started five rookies, so only the second time in NBA history since 71 when they designated starters and bench players. Held tight against the Nuggets, Chris Murray heaved a 75-footer at the end, did not go in. They lost 114-111. And then they kicked off a 7-game road trip in Houston against the Red Hot Rockets, played them tough through three quarters, but Jalen Green and Fred VanVleet finally got on track, and the Rockets pulled away 110-92. As it stands, the Blazers are 19-53. Still firmly entrenched into that 5 spot in the draft lottery, 2 wins ahead of the Charlotte Hornets. And they are, I guess if you want to say wins, if they're ahead or behind the Hornets, however you want to denote that. Either way, they have 2 more wins than the Hornets, and the Toronto Raptors are 4 wins ahead of the Blazers, the Memphis Grizzlies, 5 wins. So however you want to look at it, there's 10 games left in the season. If the Blazers still want to stay in the 5th spot, they can win 3 games. If the Raptors lose out, they'll be fine. They can win 4 games. Even if the Memphis Grizzlies lose out, they'll be fine. They would probably move up to the 6th spot in the lottery. So that's really what you want to look for. You want to look for Memphis wins, and you want to look for Toronto wins. Memphis brought back Desmond Bane. They're getting Brandon Clark back soon, who is returning after a year absence from his Achilles. So it doesn't seem like they are too concerned about the draft. The Toronto Raptors, very concerned about the draft. They owe a top 6 protected pick to the San Antonio Spurs via last deadline's Jakob Poeltl deal, and they have been tanking like no other. Obviously, RJ Barrett is out due to personal reasons after the unfortunate passing of his brother, and now it looks like they've stopped playing Emmanuel Quickly, and they are just losing to a lot of bad teams. They've lost 11 in a row. If you're looking at their schedule, they still get the Washington Wizards at home. They still have to go on the road to play Brooklyn. They may win 1 or 2 more games. Memphis is the more likely team that's probably going to string together some wins. They won in San Antonio on Friday. They get the Lakers on the second night of a back-to-back. The Lakers just won a double overtime thriller in Milwaukee, and I'm uncertain if LeBron will play tonight. And they get the Pistons at home. They get the 76ers at home. Again, the 76ers probably still without Joel Embiid. And you just never know. They've got some other games at home, but you don't know if the Lakers are going to be fighting for playoff position. Likely will. If the Nuggets will be fighting for playoff position, they probably will. The top of the West is pretty log jammed at the moment, but they do get a game Tuesday, April 9th against the San Antonio Spurs at home. Now, if you want to look at the Ringer, they are the only ones right now doing odds for the remainder of the season, projecting records. They project the Blazers to finish 22-60. So that would be a 3-7 finish to the season. That would put them right in 5th, right where they are. They think the Raptors are going to win 3 more games this year. They think the Grizzlies are going to win 4 more games this year. I don't particularly see the Raptors winning 3 more.
That's a lot of wins for such an ass team right now.
They have been just losing to a lot of bad teams. But
is Gary Trent their best player right now?
Who's playing? That?
GT, is GT their best player that's playing right now?
I would say Gary Trent Jr. is their best player, and they have shown really no, ever since that loss to Portland, they've really shown no signs of trying to get any more victories. But I want to start this show, as I'm going to, through probably through the rest of the remaining season and probably up and through up until the draft lottery. But Sage, right now, you have the Blazers slated. I mean, it's going to be a draft related scenario to kick off each show. Right now, the Blazers are slated to pick 5th and 13th. They owe, and here's my scenario for this week, and I want your opinion on it. They still currently owe a first round pick to the Chicago Bulls. It's lottery protected through 2028. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that is of significance because they own a unprotected pick swap with the Milwaukee Bucks starting in 2028. If the Blazers do not make the playoffs in 2028, that unprotected swap could go to Chicago. So that would be a huge, really prize piece of your Damian Lillard trade acquisition just going away because you're not able to make the playoffs. So that they have 3 seasons to make the playoffs.
Yeah, they have 3 seasons to do it.
So here's my scenario. The Blazers fall in the lottery. They are slated 5th right now. Let's say the Blazers fall to 7. Okay? And Chicago's sitting there at 11. Chicago's sitting there at 11. Would you trade 7 for 11, but you also get your pick back? So you're moving down to 11. You'd probably be picking 11 and 13th, but you do get your pick back. You don't have to worry about making the playoffs. You don't have to worry about losing that pick swap.
Let me look at the big board. So we would go from 7. So Ron, like the Ron Hollins era to Jacoby and Dalton.
Yes.
Basically. Yeah, do it. There isn't that much difference between 1 and 7 and 7 and 11, really. So if you drop down a small little tier, it really doesn't affect me that much. Like, Ron Hollins has issues. Dalton Connect has issues. There's no perfect prospect. And Dalton might fit better with the team than Ron Hollins or any of the other guys in the top 7. Everyone has issues. And if Richie Shea is out of the picture, which he would be if we were at 7, I think Dalton fits better, or, you know, whoever's there at 11 probably could fit better. And then we have 14 as well, or whatever the Warriors are. I would do the trade. Just, you know, it doesn't really affect us in terms, like, if Dalton's there, it doesn't really affect us that much, because it's a fit thing too. Like, I don't really trust Matas or any of those other players more than I would trust Dalton. So yeah, I would be fine with it.
Yep, I would make that move as well. Also, Portland has 2 high second round picks. They're probably not going to be able to carry. If you really wanted to, you could probably move up a spot or two from 11 to get back into the 9 spot in the draft. So Portland has flexibility, and it would basically wipe your hands clean with that Larry Nance Jr. trade that Neil Olshey, for whatever reason, decided to pull off in the summer of 2021. But let's get into the week that was. I think the biggest thing that I want to touch on is we're finally seeing Scoot Henderson get the starts. He's basically getting the green light. What have you liked? What do you need to see more of? And what does he need to improve on over these next 10 games? Because barring health, he's going to continue to probably have the green light.
I think that he's just learning. Like, it's not really, like, he doesn't need to work on anything. He just needs to have reps at the lead guy. And, like, albeit we're playing with 5 rookies or a lot of young guys, so assist, like, you can't count assists as a thing that he can develop, because some of these guys are just going to miss, and people have missed for him the entire year. So I think it's just developing confidence, developing that I'm that dude. And then if we were trying to think of something that he can develop that means something, I think that he should defend without fouling a lot better, because he's really aggressive and will try and make things happen defensively, and then that he gets fouls called on him at a rapid pace. Like, I know this isn't one of the games that we would cover, but I think against New Orleans, he picked up 2 in like 30 seconds, and it was just over-aggressiveness. So I think he needs to learn without fouling would be the thing that I would like for him to develop in these games, but it was really just reps and confidence development. Like, he's been put in such a weird situation for his first year where it's unlimited minutes, no minutes, some minutes. Yeah, so it's just really been a weird role for him this year. So get some confidence back, get some reps, much needed reps as the main guy. Don't let Delano Banton run the offense. Like, he needs to learn how to take on NBA defenses, and you're not going to do that from sitting in the corner or sitting on the bench. So really, it's just development, and don't be so aggressive defensively.
Yeah, in the month of March, he's played 10 games, 28 minutes a night, averaging 14.4 points, shooting 38.7% from the field, 28.6% from three, nearly 87% from the line on three attempts. You're looking at 5.4 assists to 3.5 turnovers and 3.5 rebounds. And I echo what you're saying. I don't think he's going to be able to get a left hand in 10 games. So I think that's summer hopeful for Scoop. But over the next 10 games, he has to cut down on the stupid fouls. I mean, some of the fouls, just like, you want
ridiculous
to pull your hair out. And like, what there have been a couple where I think he got the rookie whistle. There was one in Denver that picked up his second foul early in the game. That was not an offensive foul. But then he had one where he's, you know, defending way out in the 40 feet from the perimeter and in the third quarter, and you already have three fouls. Stay away. Like, you have to pick and choose your battles with what you want to do. I think the foul trouble has been a consistent for him, especially when he starts. And there's a lot of minutes available for him, and he can't be getting into foul trouble. I also agree, don't look at the assists. He's playing with very little play finishers out there. He's throwing some nice passes.
He's doing bricks sometimes.
He's really doing a nice job. And then the main thing that I want to see is get to the free throw line. He got to the line 7.3 times in February, and that number went in half. So I want to see him get back to the line, get a little bit more aggressive, and finish. Now, I'm not expecting Kyrie-type finishes, but if you watch the Chicago game, even the Denver game, really every game, there are two to three that you kind of just like, kind of scratch your head and say, Scoot, you're an NBA player. Like, you need to make these basic layups. I mean, whether it's he's taken off too far from the paint, he's not getting the right angle, but like some just easy finishes. So I really think if he can work on that, he's already averaging 13 points for the season. He could easily be a 17, 18 per game scorer next year just by finishing easy layups. I'm not talking about up and under reverses, left-hand finishes. Just two to three bunnies, and you're probably going to get to the line maybe once on those bunnies. So you're looking at 17, 18, 19 points just on shots that you're already taking, and that, you know, just get in the lab and work. Speaking of Scoot Henderson, go ahead.
So he averages 4 assists a game. NBA tracks potential assists.
Five.
Six. It's six.
4.8 assists per game.
Well, he potentially gets like six a game. So it's like, if these guys hit shots, I think it would make his stats look a lot better. Just like, and then he's just it just because the players aren't as good, but like, you know, if he set up Jeremy Grant with some of the assists that he's setting up to Chris Murray, who is bricking a lot of shots, those would be converted at a higher level. So, yeah, I think the stats might not look as good as he's playing, but it's because of the lack of NBA quality talent that's around him currently.
Do you think he's getting to his spots, or do you think he has work to do to get to his spots?
Well, I don't know, because it could be schematically Chauncey Billups is like telling him to do one thing and that it's not in his repertoire to do. So I don't know. I think he could get to it. Like, when he has freedom, I think he gets to his spots really well and shoots, but maybe it's schematics where Chauncey doesn't want him to get to those spots for whatever reason. Because like, when I watched him at the G League Ignite, or I watched him at All-Star Weekend, he looked like a whole different dude getting to the spots that he needed to get to and scoring and shooting. So maybe it's just schematics, like Chauncey wants to cut down on mid-range jumpers for whatever reason. I don't know. But I think he can get to his spots whenever. It's just for whatever reason he doesn't in a Portland Trailblazers uniform.
I think for the most part he's getting to his spots. Like I said, if just the beauty of being able to watch a game on replay and to go rewind and pause and see he's getting to he can get almost anywhere he wants in the paint. Like he uses the acceleration really well. He's starting to figure out to decelerate. Sometimes he doesn't know what he wants to do, but for the most part, he's getting good layup attempts. Like there's certain layup attempts you saw earlier from him or Shaden his rookie year early on where you're just like, okay, you're just trying to out jump everyone. And yeah, he's starting to figure it out what he needs to do. But you saw towards the end of the Clipper game, towards the end of the Denver game, when they were making their push, he was getting where he wanted to go on the floor. He's nearly every mid-range shot he takes, I don't have a problem with. No. 80% of the threes he takes are pretty good shots. I think he gets to his shot. I think it's on him to now finish that. And I think that's the easier part. Like being able to use, you know, dribble moves, speed, change of pace, strength. That's the hard part. Some players just aren't blessed with that, what he already has.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think he's got to work on the easy part. And it's not like easy per se, but I would say it's easier than trying to shake a defender. Mm-hmm. But speaking of Scoot Henderson, he did go to the G League Ignite. The NBA is basically exterminating that program after the end of this year. Is that surprising to you?
As an evaluator, no. This G League Ignite sucks to try and evaluate players because it's just such a fast-paced, it's an all-star or an AAU tournament type of game where they're playing at such a fast pace that everybody's numbers are just so much higher than what they should be. I don't know who's going after Matas in the college realm, but Ron Hollins was going to go to Texas. I think that he would look a lot better in a Texas setting than he did in a G League Ignite. And I know that they like had veterans, but the fast pace and like the just chucking of the players made it hard to evaluate. So if the G League Ignite was brought on to develop talent and top end talent, yeah, they put up amazing stats, but they didn't really develop anything. We knew Scoot was going to make it. We knew Kuminga was going to make it. We knew Jalen Green was going to make it. So, I mean, for those veteran players that had a chance at Ignite, it sucks. But if we're looking at it as a developmental season or a developmental team, it really didn't hit the way it should have. And the fact that they didn't play for anything other than games, like, why do you want to bust your ass when you're already putting up, like, higher numbers than you probably should? I'm glad with the NIL that this experiment's, I mean, it's worth it, but it's even hard to find G League Ignite games, full games. Like, you're just looking at highlights if you don't have, like, whatever channel it is to watch Ignite games. So, yeah, I mean, I'm glad that they did it, and I'm glad that, you know, the league did it. But with college, you know, going more to paying their players, I think that it served its purpose, and now it's cool with me if it doesn't exist.
Yeah, I would say a few factors contributed to it. Obviously, NIL, you're getting to make money in college. That was kind of the big realm. It was like, here's a route for amateurs can make money before they go to the NBA. But I know Scoot has had a lot of positives about his experience in the Ignite, but I wonder if he would have been better served going to college. You look at all of, I think another reason it's going by the wayside is no top prospect. It took them a long time to get solid. Jalen Green's
even with Scoot, bro.
Jonathan Kuminga. Like, their 2021 draft picks are just now taking... Jalen Green's just now learning how to play basketball. Jonathan Kuminga's just now getting an opportunity. Scoot struggled is struggling this year. You're looking at Matas Buzelis, Tyler Smith, Ron Holland, all struggling this year. Dyson Daniels, you know, is struggling in the league. Like, you don't have that one prospect you can champion and say, this Ignite program works. We have to keep it around. Factor in, they're paying them like $1 million.
Yeah.
Like, I just think they're looking to spend the money elsewhere. You made a good point. There's really nothing to play for. There's no collegiate pride. You know, there's no school pride to play for when you play for in college. You're just like, oh, like, it is AAU. I'm just going out playing basketball with my buddies and moving on to the next. There's not a lot of skin in the game for these players.
Remember how Scoot was passing in the first like quarter of the game, where it was just lazy passes that absolutely works in Ignite, but does not work in an actual competitive
concept? How did they not know he needed glasses in 2 years?
Yeah.
And you look at right now, Scoot, I think, was so physically dominant at the high school level and to an extent at the G League level. I don't think they worked on his fundamentals. And that's pretty apparent in he has no left hand. Like, how do you, 2 years in a program, how do you not address that? Like, he doesn't even look to go left. And I hope the Blazers address it, because you're not going to be able to be a successful NBA player just with being a one-hand dominant player. You got to use both hands to finish, to pass.
Jalen Green's development, like, he looked like the best cutting prospect I've ever seen in the G League Ignite. But do you think those teams that were going against the Ignite were really digging in on cuts and off-ball, like, movement? No, they weren't. They were trying to... When you go against the Ignite, it's like playing the Colorado Rockies in baseball. You're trying to boost up those stats for yourself. So why try and slow the game down when everything is so fast? You know, like, if I'm on the remix and I'm going against the Ignite, go for it, Tyler Smith. Shoot that shot, because I'm going to have like 20 extra possessions for my team to potentially score and get me noticed by some, you know, team. So I think it was a worthwhile experiment, but with NIL money, would Scoot have gone to Georgia? Like,
I don't know, because he graduated early. He was at the
Ignite. He was there for 2 years. So yeah.
I don't know about his recruitment, but like you said, as an evaluator, I like it. College basketball is more accessible. I think college basketball, it's good for the game, even though we've got a lot of one and dones. This tournament's kind of brought back some life, I think, into the game. NIL is so important, which you get like some more collegiate stars, like Drew Timmy stayed around. Armando Bacot is staying around. Mm-hmm. You've got Hunter Dickinson staying around. Zach Edey staying around, mostly bigs that, you know, don't project supremely well to the league. Some of those players aren't even were draft eligible, didn't get drafted. But it's good for the college game because they can now make money off their likeness and, you know, have really good, you know, upperclassmen seasons, and you get good basketball. You sprinkle in some of these rookies and hopefully it looks more like the 03 Syracuse team with Melo and 2012 Kentucky teams with Anthony Davis, where,
you know, imagine what Tyler Smith would do against NCAA talent with his stretch ability and his bounce? Like, if he was on, I think he's also from Texas. If he went to Texas, you know how nasty he would look in a college game where he just stretches all of these shitty college players out and then scores and dunks it and shoots threes. And I have to try hard to find an Ignite game that's archived. You know how easy it is for us to find a full Texas game or a full, you know, even I found Weber State games. I watched Weber State games archived, 5 of them. And I was able to really learn what Dylan Jones is like. I would have to find like G League Ignite games on the dark web to find 5 full Ignite games. Not happening. So again, I think it's great that it happened, but I think college finally stepped up and had an NIL deals. And I hope with NIL, we can get an NCAA basketball game, because that would be fun.
Back to the Blazers, and it was a pretty good week for Chris Murray, specifically against the Clippers. 17 points, 5 rebounds, but most importantly, 7-11 from the field, 3 of 6 from 3 in that first game, 21 points, 7 rebounds. Again, in that second contest, 8 of 15 from the field, also 3 of 6 from downtown. And I was about to come on this show and, you know, say how Chris Murray kind of made me eat my words. I chose Jabari Walker over him in that first four exercise we did last week. But then he just really struggled again against the Nuggets, 1 of 6 from 3, and then 0 of 6 against the Houston Rockets. Sage, he does everything else pretty
much
well.
He's the most cerebral player on this team, easily.
You know, he's not good at creating for himself a lot, but he does have a good straight line drive.
Did you think that he had the chance to be anything creation-wise when you were watching him at Iowa?
No.
No, me neither. I think, like,
his passing shot is
bad.
He would be drafted. It was because of the 3-and-D capabilities. Now, he does move better than I thought. He's a better defender than I thought. He's a better finisher than I thought. He looked bulky
in Iowa. Now he looks
like lean and mean.
Yeah. I think once Scoot is better, Chris Murray will be better because one of the things that impressed me about Chris Murray was that he could pass really well. So once Scoot breaks down the defense, I think Chris Murray, and hopefully his confidence gets better shooting, but Chris Murray is going to be able to find the person. Like, if he gets the ball, he'll be able to make the pass for the score. But yeah, the shooting is going to be the biggest thing. But, I mean, I root for him because he's so smart and cerebral. It's just the shot just is fucking missing so badly. It's like Russell Westbrook bad on some of these shots. Like, because most shooters, and then I learned this from watching Ryan Anderson, you might miss it far or short if you're aiming at the rim. Chris Murray misses the east-west too. So he has to get in the lab and practice this shot, because how many first-round picks do we have for the next 6 years? It's quite a bit. And if he's trying to stay and get a second contract, he has to hit an open three with no one closing out.
Watching the games where all the rookies are starting, in the back of my mind, I'm like, there's a numbers crunch game going on. They're auditioning not just for minutes in the games. They're auditioning for their roles next season because
other teams, bro.
There's a lot of similar player types. I would say Tubani has more of a defensive mind to him. Jabari's got more of the heart and hustle to him. You know, Chris has the cerebral aspect, but you factor in those. There's not a lot of other ways they separate from one another. Obviously, I think Rupert was the long-term project, and so in a way, he has that working for him. But if he's not careful or he doesn't develop fast enough, maybe you draft a small forward this draft and he moves ahead of him. And like you said, you've got all of these other draft picks coming up.
Did we give him a part of an MLE, or is he on a second round contract, Ryan Rupert?
Well, they gave him a big boy contract because that's how they were able to get him at 43, as his agent told other teams, don't draft me. Portland's going to actually sign me to a contract. So I think they did use part.
And that gives him safety, because if it was a normal second round guy, they're so easily cuttable or tradable for nothing. The fact that they gave him part of a probably MLE or BAE, like that's huge for him, because if he was like the 50 or whatever pick he was, 46, that's really cuttable. But since they gave him a real contract, he's probably he's safe for another year for sure.
So Shaedon Sharpe is now practicing with the Rip City Remix. Looks like he could make his return within the next week or so. Who knows? There's 10 games left in the season. What do you think any of the other Blazers are going to return? We've got DeAndre Ayton with elbow tendonitis. Jeremy Grant's basically had a hamstring for the past like 2 weeks. Malcolm Brogdon's been out almost since the All-Star break.
Mm-hmm.
Matisse Thybulle has some ankle issues. I'm sure I miss Anthony Simons has knee tendonitis. Like, clearly they want to keep their spot in the lottery, but clearly they also want to see Shaedon Sharpe.
And
he wants to play as well. And I think you want to see more minutes with Shaedon and Scoot.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think I think if Shaden's ready to go, I think they definitely will play Shaedon. But of those other core players, do you think we'll see them the rest of the year?
I seriously doubt it. I seriously doubt it. Like
you do get lip service, like when because I go and I pick up Olga sometimes, and I listen to the radio, especially if it's an early game. You get the pregame, and you kind of hear him. Oh yeah, you know, so close to returning. I'm like, I don't know if they necessarily want to do that. Like they've got a couple of winnable games against Charlotte and Washington on this road trip. Mm-hmm. Like your cushion to move down the lottery is it's thin. It's not razor thin, but you start winning some extra games you're not supposed to, then you start to sweat because, you know, other teams, when it comes to tanking in the NBA, there is just no shame. We've seen the Blazers do it as well. Like there's just no shame when it comes to tanking, especially when you've got a team like the Raptors who absolutely want to get up into the top six. I don't think Memphis cares too much. Maybe Portland doesn't. I guess we will find out, but I keep hearing Malcolm Brogdon. I would be surprised.
I would be shocked. Why would you're trying to develop Scoot? Why would you take someone that absolutely takes minutes away from Scoot? You got like
the only way
Delano Banton is going to be a fifth guard. Like, there's no reason to put any of these vets in to screw up the rotation of these young guys that need to be. They need to know if Chris Murray is ever going to shoot threes, if Jabari is going to, you know, I guess shoot threes too, if Tumani can be better than the eighth man on an NBA team. There's so much we just don't know about these Blazers. I think it'd be foolish to add more confusion and more like free flowing of just having these young guys develop. And I've worked in radio for I started in 2009. We lie to keep the public listening. We're not going to play them. Or let's say not. We're most likely not going to play them. We're trying to keep people online and listening longer. So we'll say, I saw him at practice. He's looking good. Sean Kemp's looking like the Seattle Sean Kemp, not the fat Sean Kemp. We're looking at a real Sean Kemp. Like, come on, bro. We're lying. They're lying.
I would say it makes sense to play Brogdon if you shut down Simons. Like, you can't have both of them with Scoot and Shaden. Like, if you want to start to see what that would look like, because if you're thinking of trading Simons in the offseason, you want to get a little bit of taste of that. I don't think Thybulle returns just because of that logjam we discussed at the wings. You've already seen what Matisse can do. It wouldn't surprise me to see DeAndre come back because you just really don't have legit NBA centers.
I just want him to avoid the Charlotte game because we're going to win that one if he's there.
Jeremy and Ant are the two that I can't get a read on. I would say it's going to be dependent on the Charlotte and Washington games. If you split them, I think you can bring them back. I think they want to be respectable against the Celtics to close that out. And then you've got three home games. I think they want to be competitive in those games to end the season. They specifically definitely want to beat Golden State for all intents and purposes. But then you probably might want to lose to the Rockets because that would help them catch Golden State the next night. So it'll be interesting to see. I really don't think they need to play a whole lot of them, if I'm being honest. As long as they're staying competitive with the five rookie lineup, which it seems like they're doing, get Shaden back and maybe DA, since he's a good play finisher, and you can work around that. But like, tanking or not, my feelings on Anthony Simons aside,
you've seen so much.
Don't play him. Don't play him. If it's a knee, do not play him. Like, we're not talking about a toe. We're not talking about a finger. We're not talking about, you know, the knee is probably, aside from a head injury, the knee is the one thing you don't want to mess with. Knee and foot.
And if you're trying to play him next year, you don't want to injure him permanently. Look what happened with the Sixers and Joel Embiid. He was obviously injured when he was playing, and then now he's out for probably the entire year because of something stupid. Like, Nick Nurse does that. Chauncey Billups just lose these games and not play guys that can permanently hurt themselves for nothing. Like, in a perfect world, we just develop these guys and the rest of the vets just chill. So, yeah, I, as much as I would like to see confident basketball, it's just not worth it with 10 games left and the best possible thing that could happen is we lose games for, you know, this draft pick, you know.
All right. Do you have anything else you want to discuss before we look at some upcoming games?
Not really, no.
Quickly, again, I'm impressed with Tumani's finishing. He's been doing some nice step throughs, finishing with both hands. Had some really great plays to end the Denver game to make it even closer. I think that's the type of low usage winning plays that once you start, you could start to build. You know, he can fit into any roster. He and Chris, you know, Chris needs to start making those shots. Tumani needs to become a little bit more respectable from three. Whoever of those two can just become a lights out shooter is going to get the starting role, is going to get the big contract. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out over these next 10 games and probably into summer league as well. But let's look ahead. The Atlanta Hawks, Portland beat the Hawks just 2 weeks ago. It was a Simons and DeJounte Murray showdown. Portland escaped with a 106-102 victory. DA also had a monster performance in that one. But you look at the Atlanta Hawks, they've got a ton of players out, you know, Jalen Johnson, Trey Young, Onyeka Okongwu, Sadiq Bey, AJ Griffin. I mean, good Lord, you go down the list, and DeJounte Murray is questionable for the game against Portland. That would probably sway my decision. If
DeJounte is out, yeah, for sure. Is it Trent Forrest, their next point guard, or is it like...
Dude, I was at that game on the 13th, and they had some players I had never heard of in my life play for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, they probably should be tanking for a pick that can fit around, or, you know, whatever they decide to do. A better draft pick would be helpful for them in the long haul.
DA is questionable. Matisse is questionable. Jeremy Grant's doubtful. Simons has been ruled out. I would bet my bottom dollar if DeJounte is not. I still don't think you're going to see Ayton Thibault or Jeremy Grant, especially with a team that you already beat, especially with a team that is so banged up is Atlanta. They just had a massive comeback against Boston, down by 30. You know, they're still in the play-in. There's no chance for them to really fall out because of how bad the rest of the East,
the East is. Yeah.
So it's going to come down to the Blazers win if DeJounte doesn't play. The Hawks win if DeJounte does play. But what I want to see an aggressive Scoot Henderson play without fouling, get to the free throw line, and set up his shooters. This is an Atlanta team that's not going to put up a lot of resistance. Mm-hmm. That paint is going to be open. I want to see
it's going to be fast too.
I want to see a lot of off-ball movement, off-ball cutting. You know, I think this is a game that, you know, Tumani can do really well cutting off the ball, and Chris should just get a lot of opportunities to shoot. Anything else you're looking at in this game?
I want to see Dwap Reith have a little bit more resistance on Clint Capela. You know what Clint Capela is going to do every time that he's playing, if he plays. He's trying to get into the paint. Now, if he can play the five and not be a complete and utter train wreck defensively, I think it would help for his career long term. So if he can show any resistance to Clint Capela, I think that would be good. But really, it's DeJounte versus Scoot. Hopefully we get to see that.
Up next is Friday in Miami against the Heat. Portland lost to the Heat 106-96 back on February 27th, a game in which DeAndre Ayton had a first half double-double. Portland was up 10 at the break. DA got hurt on a Kevin Love charge, and the Heat kind of cranked up the heat, no pun intended, and ran away with that one in the second half. They've had quite a bit of minor nicks and bruises as well. Butler, Hero, Love, and Duncan Robinson all missed Tuesday's game against the Golden State Warriors. I don't know their status for the game, but, you know, they're another team that is looking to stay out of that play-in. So you would think some of those players would be in uniform Friday night. Bam Adebayo will obviously be there, but you know, they're a game and a half behind the Pacers for that coveted the sixth seed in the Western or Eastern Conference, excuse me. And you don't want to finish seventh. That's a date with the Milwaukee Bucks. You want to finish sixth. You want to go up against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Maybe they do want to play the Milwaukee Bucks. Miami's had such good success against the Bucks in the past, but they're also tied for the eighth spot with the Philadelphia 76ers. Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot of jockeying going on.
Six is so much more safety, too, with not having to even be in the play-in.
I'd still rather play the Cavs than the Bucks, regardless of the success. This is a different Milwaukee team than prior. You can't just load up on Giannis and make Drew Holiday beat you. They've got Damian Lillard now. This game's going to come down, a lot of the games are going to come down to how serious do opponents take the Trailblazers? We saw Houston, who had won eight in a row, knocking on the door of the 10th seed and kind of snoozing a bit. You know, Van Vliet coming off a career night, just really struggled. Jalen in the same thing as well. I know Jabari Smith was out for suspension. Şengün obviously out for a while with that knee injury. Tari Eason's out for the season. So they had some big bodies up front that were missing, but you know, there was a bit of a sleepwalk. The Denver Nuggets, even with the veteran team they had, it took them a while to put Portland away, and Portland never really went away.
I feel like so the heat in their culture, if they take us lightly, the whole branding that they did this year just doesn't mean shit. Like, they have to. We still have NBA quality players. Now, Jimmy Butler probably won't play because he doesn't play basketball that much in the regular season.
I think all of those guys probably will come back now that I look at their schedule. They play Tuesday at home against Golden State. This game is their next one Friday. So they've got, you know, Wednesday, Thursday off, and then they play Portland Friday, and then they have the Wizards on Sunday in DC. So they probably can rest those players as well. So I think a lot of those guys will return. I think Miami wins.
Yeah.
But again, I think these road games are going to be pretty tough. Portland tends to play well against the better teams in the league. They tend to struggle.
We could be like in the game for three quarters, and then the Heat just realize, oh fuck, we got to play a game, and then win by 15.
The game I'm looking forward to most this week is the Orlando Magic. Kind of the surprise of the NBA, if you ask me. They are a team that is one game behind the Knicks for home court advantage in the Eastern Conference. I don't think many people would have saw that coming into the season. Most probably thought they were a fringe play-in team, but they've been relatively healthy. All of their guys are good to go. They present... they are a team that is going with that skill size combo that I think is taking over the NBA when you've got Wendell Carter, Franz and Mo Wagner, Paolo Banchero. They've got, you know, big guards and Markel Fultz and Anthony Black. They got Jonathan Isaac. I mean, they've got a lot of length. This is a team that Portland has not seen since opening night.
Yeah, so day one.
You have to kind of throw everything out the window. But again, this is a team that could give the Blaze, like, this is, if I look at the road trip, even the Celtics, who don't really have a lot to play for right now because they're so far ahead of everyone, this is the game where I'm like, could get ugly.
I'm just like, would you put Timani on Paolo and then Chris on Franz?
Yeah, I think that's what you have to do.
I want to see how those two wings handle going against some pretty special creators on the other side.
Because you kind of got a little taste of it with Porter Jr. and Aaron Gordon Saturday in Portland. Porter was snoozing during that game. He had another career night prior, and he took one shot in the first half. He kind of woke up a bit, but Aaron Gordon was active all around, just a menace on the glass. So they've had a little taste of what that looks like, but it is a different skill set.
Paolo's probably the best dribbling power forward in the league. Like, he's doing CJ McCollum dribble moves on a regular basis. And then Franz is a really nice initiator from the small forward who's I think that the thing that I want to focus on is Tumani and Chris defending those elite playmaking wings.
And I think this could be a really big game for Dwight Reith. He allowed Portland to stay in a couple of those home games just because of the stretching ability that he has to shoot from the perimeter. And again, if you're taking either Carter or Banchero away from the basket, that opens things up for whether it's, you know, Scoot, whether it's Delano, you know, who knows who's really going to be available. But I think Orlando wins. I would love to see Portland keep this one close because Orlando is a good team. And I love watching teams playing for something this time of year. Like the worst thing is when, you know, it's bad enough the Blazers are tanking, but when you're like trying to predict the game against the Atlanta Hawks, Wizards, or Hornets, where you don't know who the hell is in the lineup, what you're going to see from game to game, it's really not enticing at all. But when you at least have Portland going up against an opponent like the Magic that have something to play for, it's like, okay, this is what basketball's supposed to be. Like, you know, let's finish the season strong and see what we have. And, you know, that would be a really interesting 4-5 matchup between the Knicks and Magic. And if you want to go even further, they're only a game and a half behind the Cavaliers for the third seed.
Mm-hmm. So they have something to play for sure.
They have a lot to play for. I have the Blazers losing this week, but winning if DeJounte Murray doesn't play. Mm-hmm. I'm 3 up on you, so now's your chance to make a push. Do you have any differing opinions?
I don't have any differing opinions. Like, I don't feel like it's a worth, like, one thing you have to realize as like a prop bettor or a bettor is if the line isn't good, you don't take it. The line isn't good for me to think that a team is going to lose to us. Now, Atlanta is the one, but you said if DeJounte isn't in that we're going to win. And yeah, that's what I would do too. So I have no way of edging you out in any wins this week because the bet isn't there. I tried to do it with Philadelphia and I got kicked in the nuts for it. So I kind of, or Toronto. So those two wins is the reason why you're winning at such a large margin. So
speaking of prop bets, the NBA is investigating Jante Porter.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember
there
him?
There was a lot of bets flooding in for him, abnormal amount. And there's video clips of him banking in threes and not looking too happy about it. Sage, you're a responsible bettor. You know what you're doing. I feel like you're in the minority when it comes to that. And I feel like sports betting is getting crazy.
Yeah.
And I think it will become an epidemic when people don't know how to handle their money and handle their wagers. I think you're the exception and not the rule. However, with Adam Silver basically just ushering in all of these gambling companies, it's now available in League Pass. Like, it's everywhere you see. ESPN has betting lines. They have segments on bets.
Mm-hmm.
This is not surprising that it has trickled down to the players.
Okay.
At what point do you think the NBA has to draw a line? Like, do you think it has to happen to a bigger player or just the frequency of it happening? Because, you know, it's one thing if people think, oh man, are the refs in on it? But if the players are in on it, the whole thing collapses.
Well, I think you have to look at what's happening in the MLB with Shohei too. Like, he's legitimately the best player in the MLB, in my opinion.
In the world.
And, yeah, well, in the world. He's like the Michael Jordan of baseball because he can hit for power and contact and pitches, not this year, but he can pitch at an elite level as well. So I think that gambling is going to be very interesting what happens with Shohei and what in that whole situation, because that looks extremely fugazi with, you know, the interpreter taking all the you know, and it changes every day. I think DeJounte Porter, let's be real, I didn't think he was going to be in the league because he had so many knee injuries. I think that what happens with Shohei is going to be more important with all of sports than DeJounte Porter because of he shouldn't even be playing ball right now. He was so good in college, but he had such bad and devastating injuries. So maybe it helps him to suck for over unders and stuff like that. And honestly, like the people doing this with their guts, it's you gotta not use your gut for so many bets and stuff. So hopefully, but yeah, it's gonna be interesting with what happens with DeJounte. But I think Shohei is really the thing that will happen with prop betting and gambling. But since it's been introduced and there's so many books now that, like, one of the Paul brothers owns Better. Like, that it's becoming such a big business. Like, I've applied for many jobs doing, like, the setting prop lines. So it's like, I get it. But yeah, like, now that sports betting is opened up, it's not going away. And we're going to have to find a way for players to not be involved in it. And, you know, Calvin Ridley bit on the shitty Falcons that got suspended for a year. I think that it has to be devastating to that player for them to not do it. Like, I mean, Pete Rose isn't going to be in the Hall of Fame because of it. So I think it legitimately has to be swift and really devastating if someone actually gets confirmed to be helping prop bettors with their stuff. But yeah, I think Shohei is going to be the thing that really, really changes it. And, you know, if you want to be responsible with your betting, check out oddshopper.com/DeSage. I'll put it in the link in bio. So if you want to be smart with your gambling and bet unders like you should most of the time, check out oddshopper.com.
Real quick before we wrap it up, with Scoot Henderson being 19 and now 20, running the offense, playing point guard, is point guard the hardest position in team sports to just be given the keys? I would argue yes, but I want to hear your...
Maybe QB too.
And I thought QB, but QB doesn't have to play defense. QB can also lean on the run game. QB also has... He might have a bad offensive line, but he could also have a decent offensive line. So, like, I think quarterback is incredibly difficult, probably number two on my list, but not having to play defense. And same thing with, like, a pitcher. Like, you don't have to play offense. So that's kind of just what I was thinking about.
Maybe, like, left tackle, too. That's kind of... If you're going against TJ Watt or Miles Garrett trying to fucking swim move you or put their hands on your chest plate so you just run into the quarterback, that's gotta be shitty, dude. For a rookie,
center would be tougher because you're making the calls, maybe audibles.
PG's gotta be one of the hardest.
Yeah, to me, it's the hardest because, like, you have what now 12, 13, 14 other guys on the roster. You have to know where they like the ball, mm-hmm. You have to know the sets, you have to play defense. You have to know the coverages on defense. Like, you also have to figure out when to score, how you want to score, to pass. Like, you have so many
pacing. You have to follow the coach, what he wants to do with the offense.
And so, all of that being said, you know, I know people are frustrated with Scoot and probably expected more, but, like, let's look at the context. He's really the only rookie point guard getting a ton of minutes. There's a reason Amen Thompson moved off ball. He does not play point guard for the Houston Rockets. Like, Scoot is getting the ball in his hands and is basically saying, here you go, run the show. And it's very hard to do. Obviously, you want to see improvement. And I think next year, the summer, is going to be a huge indication of that and big responsibility on his shoulders. But I think he'll get there. But it was just more like, let's relax a bit. Like,
not everybody CJ Stroud.
No, it's not like he also... They also made the playoffs this year, so they had a pretty good team around CJ Stroud, too.
Like, and, man, when you looked at that team initially, it's like, who the fuck is Tank Dell? Who is Nico Collins? Who are these bums?
Yeah, and, you know, so just, like, be patient. But, and, like, if you're really worried about Scoot, get League Pass, watch the games. He gets to his spots. He's making some really dumb decisions that are correctable. It's not like...
Nothing he does is... not correctable.
Yeah, it's not like he's getting walled up or he's dribbling off his foot and he's getting the ball stolen all the time. Like,
watch it, March Madness too. How many people in March Madness can break down the opponent? I'm watching Jared McCain. I'm going to do a podcast on him probably Friday. And I'm like, oh man, people are saying that he's a point guard. He could be a point guard. I'm like, nah, I can't. He's getting walled up by Florida State players. What happens when Herb Jones is on them? It's playing point guards fucking difficult, especially if you are a guy that relies on winning your one-on-one matchups first before you pass the ball. Scoot's going to win his one-on-one matchups, and then whatever happens with the broken defense is going to happen. He's not one of these like John Stockton pick and roll type of dudes. He wants to win his one-on-one matchup and then make a decision as he's going to the hoop. Like that is a very difficult way of playing point guard. So yeah, it's a very difficult one. Lastly, my last thing I want to say,
but I have one more.
Are you excited for opening day for baseball tomorrow?
Yeah, I'll watch. I usually don't get into baseball until basketball's wrapped up. I'll watch the games. But like once summertime hits and you've got some summer league, but like, you know, the finals are over, the draft is taking place, like July, August, like that's prime baseball time. But yeah, I'll watch the games. It's easy to have on. It's easy to listen to.
It's fun to listen to the games on the radio, to be honest.
162 of them things. I can't get too invested right off the bat. Like just, you know, watch. It's part of my routine. My last point was there was a moment at the end of the Nuggets game where Rupaire gets fouled. And Chauncey Billups is yelling, "Hit one." Apparently it's a defensive strategy. Well, you've got 19-year-old Ryan Rupaire who's like, okay, I'm going to go to the free throw line and we need the ball back. I'm going to make one and I'm going to intentionally miss one. Like maybe change up your terminology a bit so hit one doesn't sound like make one, miss one, because that's exactly what I would have done. Mm-hmm. Like there's just another incident.
Chauncey fucking sucks, man.
Yeah, new coach, please. All right, Sage, wrap us up.
Do you think he's going to leave next year, or do you think that we're going to wait until that contract is over to decline?
We're going
to
bring his booty back.
And I heard, no, I don't want to talk shit about Peter Samson because he and I worked in radio at the same exact time. I actually started first. If you know, no bragging. I started first. But he was saying that Chauncey Billups can be the best mentor for Scoot because they're both third picks in the NBA draft that have high expectations. I don't really believe it because you have to be able to have a team surrounding your star point guard that's competent. And Chauncey Billups is a real reason why the competency isn't a real thing. So
I'm sorry. There's just basketball is played differently. Every person's path to the league is differently. Like you could have a shared experience. It doesn't make you a good coach.
No.
Like, then what are we keeping Malcolm Brogdon around for? Like he's supposed to be Scoot's mentor. Like it feels like we're continuously, you know, stretching these excuses out to keep this guy around. He can't coach basketball.
No, he
doesn't know how to coach basketball.
He's not a leader of men.
He was a former point guard, but like, Sage, if he wasn't a former point guard, would he still have this job?
No, absolutely not. He wouldn't get this job to begin with.
No. Like, yeah, he took a playoff team and completely ran it into the ground. The GM had to demolish the team, and we just keep going round in circles with, injuries.
We're just trying to lower the field goal for him.
Lower
to
the bar.
Just,
lower
yeah, the bar. No, he's absolutely, like, and he even said, well, he's not the best strategist. Well, what the fuck is a coach supposed to do?
Like, I love Clyde Drexler. Terrible coach. Got fired from Houston almost immediately. Would I want him coaching us and he could relate to Shaden Sharp both being high flyers? Heck no. Like, yeah, you don't need to be a former player to be a great coach. Like, that's just...
I mean, yeah, like... Yeah, you know who needs to be part of this team next year. But, I mean... Charles Lee for coach, but
maybe I wouldn't mind David Adelman, assistant for Denver, son of
Rick. You know who I really want on the staff? Kim English from Providence. They were doing a lot of like during the Big East tournament, excuse me. They were doing a lot of like coach talk, and my mom and I were watching it. And he was talking to these players like they're intelligent, smart human beings that like deserve respect, not yelling at them, but like just talking to them like they're smart. And I'm like, you know, Chauncey Billups isn't doing that shit.
I also think Juwan Howard
would
be a better NBA coach than college coach.
I mean, Michigan sucked. But just think about how many NBA talent left that team the year before. Did you really think Cody Bufkin was going to leave? I didn't. Hunter Dickinson leaving? If Connor Dickinson was there, I bet they're at least talked about as a NCAA tournament team.
And there are certain coaches that are better for the pros than collegiate and vice versa. You don't have to deal with recruiting.
Yeah, Rick Pitino was ass as a coach, or Calipari was ass as a head coach.
Saban was terrible in the pros, great at college. You look at a guy, I mean, there's very few Brad Stevens who did well at both.
Or Larry Brown.
Larry Brown, yep. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I definitely think he's coming back for another year.
And then he's gone.
I would hope so. I think the 2025 draft class is so strong that I bet they still probably make another run at the top of the lottery next year. But then hopefully we get something else, because we got to see something different. It's just, yeah. All right. That fart sound kind of tells me it's time to
wrap this one up. Later, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back. Well, I'll be back doing a Jared McCain podcast, and we'll be back Monday to talk about After the Madness Part 2. It's sounding like a fucked up mixtape, that series, but I like it. So thank you all for listening. We are going to be back soon. Peace. I am hungry. All right, I'll talk to you later.
Later, dude.
Wherever you may be, this is Bill Shinley. Good night, everybody.
Let's go! Come on.